You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
When the Jags come with you, Falcons, what you gonna do? Browns, what you gonna do? Carolina, what you gonna do? Them Jags coming for you. Yeah, them digging Jags, here they come.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. We are back with a real pod for the first time in a little bit after the Shrine Game with all the interviews down there, as well as at the Senior Bowl, which Chris did a great job of covering. Speaking of Chris, I am back with Chris Thornton, who you can follow on Twitter at Misto Cristofo. Chris, say what's up to the people for the first time in a long time.
I am alive, folks. The hiatus is over.
The hiatus is over, and what a great show we have for today after a bunch of NFL news coming out, quarterback conundrum pretty much everywhere. And with that, we are joined by First Coast News Jaguars beat reporter Mike Kay to talk a little bit of Blake Bortles and Jaguars quarterback conundrum, as well as the rest of the league. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So we'll go ahead and dive right into it because we know that the rumors are hot and just about everywhere. People are talking about the future of Blake Bortles for this Jaguars team. And people were wondering, you know, is he going to end up getting cut for someone else, or, you know, what's going to happen? Then kind of out of nowhere, not necessarily out of nowhere, because there was hints at a wrist injury throughout the entire year, him being on the injury report every week, but he had surgery on his right wrist. So, Mike, what do you know about this surgery, if it's a long-term thing or just something that needed to be done?
Well, this was something that seemed to be something that they were very well aware of during the off-season, last off-season. And, you know, instead of losing Blake for several weeks during the offseason program or having him, you know, injured entering training camp, they decided this, you know, this is a huge year for him. This is a huge year for the organization. If we're going to keep him around, let's have him go through the season and see what happens. And then, you know, they had a prolonged season, probably a lot longer than they assumed they would have. And most of us would have assumed they would have. And I guess it kind of just flared to the point where he needed to have a minor surgery. From what I understand, it was relatively minor. I don't know all the details, but I don't expect it to impact the $19 million option. I've talked to doctors about what it could potentially be, and they don't think that it, unless it was a I don't want to speculate just because it is an injury. But I don't expect him to be out for a very long time. And I think he'll be able to pass a physical when he would need to pass a physical in theory for the option.
So you're saying that it should, well, by from who you've talked to, it should be a fairly short recovery time and it's not going to affect the option. So with that being said, and the rumors and reports are coming out, is Blake going to be their guy for 2018?
I'm under the belief, yes, that he will be the guy. I think when you look at what happened with Alex Smith, and I've talked about this on social media several times, Alex Smith was not going to work under a one-year deal. You see that now with the Cleveland reports. And he got paid pretty well, $23.5 million per year. I talked to an NFL executive that just his response was wowzer to when I showed him the numbers, and it's, you know, it, he got a lot of money. He's in his mid thirties. He probably won't see the end of that contract, but he'll probably see three to four years of it. And I think, you know, if you're the Jaguars, yeah, you have this window, but I think the guy that they want under at quarterback is either Bortles or somebody they draft and groom, or somebody who fits into their long-term plans that can allow them to continue to get better as a football team. We have seen teams dish out long-term contracts to guys like Joe Flacco and even to some extent Drew Brees, where it impacts your ability to, you know, sign guys. Matt Stafford, another guy. So I think what they want to do is, here's the way I look at it from an external logic. This isn't their thinking, but if I were them and I was looking, or if I was looking from the outside and they do end up keeping him, my thought process is you have probably the first $100 million cornerback in Jalen Ramsey. You've highly paid AJ Boye. You want to keep Yannick Ngakoue till the cows come home. You've got all of these defensive parts, and you still have to really rework this offense. I know Blake Bortles gets a lot of the up and down credit for their success and failures this year, but he did what he did with subpar wide receivers and an offensive line that most GMs would tell you is less than ideal. So I think you've got to look at the way they reshape that. They've got to reshape the tight end position, which didn't give them enough this year, as well as Mercedes Lewis blocked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this defense is built, but they don't really have a lot of depth. They got very, very lucky that they didn't have some serious injuries. So I think overall you look at Blake Bortles, you keep him under that option, and I know this is a long answer, but you keep Bortles under that option. It still gives you flexibility to draft a guy in the top three. You don't have to worry about implementing a new quarterback in your system, wondering if he's going to fit or not, or if you have to fix your system for him. When you've got a built defense and probably a 2 to 3 year window to really make some noise in the short term, I mean, you know, that to me is the appeal of keeping Blake. And honestly, if you would have told me Blake was going to throw for 3,700 yards, 21 touchdowns, and 13 interceptions, I guarantee you the Jaguars would have taken that preseason last year.
Definitely. And now, if he, assuming he is quote unquote their guy for next year, do you believe that it is under that $19 million a year option, or do you think they could try and rework something?
I think both options are on the table, and I know that sounds kind of like an option, like a cop out, but I think it depends on how they view this offseason, right? So you look at their, like, if I looked at this offseason, I would say, hey, they need to get a playmaking tight end. They need to come out of it with at least one starting guard and a potential starting right tackle down the road. And, you know, I think they do need to draft the heir apparent. So I think any extension would probably come after the draft. If I had to assume, just looking at all the spare parts, this is purely assumption, I would think that move would not come until after they figure out what pieces they get in the draft, what pieces they have in pre-agency, how far they think they can go, because the beauty of that $19 million option is it's essentially the franchise tag, but you get to work out an extension whenever you pretty much want. So they could go into the season theoretically, if Blake's willing to play on the option, which I would think that he would be, and see how he performs in the preseason, see if he has a 5-interception training camp practice, see if he lights it up, torches this defense, see if he makes strides with a fixed wrist. So I think that's the benefit of having him. I know Kirk Cousins is everybody's guy, it seems like. That man is going to get paid, because if Jimmy Garoppolo, every second the 49ers wait, Jimmy Garoppolo is making more and more money.
Right.
If Jimmy Garoppolo makes maybe $27 million, if I'm Kirk Cousins' agent, I say, hey, he started 4 or 5 times as many games as Garoppolo, gotten a team to the playoffs, pony up. I could see him realistically getting a better deal than Stafford, which is kind of crazy on the surface if you think about it.
Right. And we can talk, we're going to talk a little bit about Kirk Cousins, of all those draft guys, in a minute. But you mentioned some pieces, and the obvious piece that everyone wants in this Jaguars offense next year that has been missing since his one and only reception against Houston in Week 1 is Allen Robinson. How realistic do you think it is that he ends up back here next year, and is it more on a team-friendly prove-it option, or is it that he's going to get paid like a top receiver, whether that be on a one-year franchise tag or they just somehow come to some extension?
Well, right now, the feeling that I get is that both are open to a deal. I think that this is an opportunity to, you know, this is an opportunity to really assess how you feel about a guy coming off an ACL injury. I've always said that this is very similar to the Jeremy Maclin issue that he had when he was in Philadelphia coming off his first contract. He had a torn ACL. He ended up signing a one-year deal, I believe, for about $7 or $8 million. Played out the deal, caught several balls, had 1,300 yards, had a career year, and ended up getting really good money from the Chiefs. I mean, if you're both sides, maybe you think, hey, a one-year deal, prove-it deal works out because you're probably going to double, triple, or quadruple his salary and get that done. I mean, I don't think this is a situation where you have a player that really wants to leave, or you have a team that really wants to move on. So I think it's a matter of, hey, how do we figure this out where it makes sense for us? I think the franchise tag is interesting because it is so much money and he is coming off a serious knee injury. But then you also weigh the fact that he's only 24. So it's like, I don't know if there's the right answer here. I think it's just whatever they're comfortable with.
Right. And I'm sure that will play out hopefully sooner than later, because I think that's the biggest thing to a lot of Jags fans is that they want to know if they're getting this guy back and they're curious as to how it's all going to go down. But that will take us to our first break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the man who is going to be making a lot of money this offseason, whether that be in Jacksonville or elsewhere. That is Kirk Cousins.
Hey guys, the big game is here and it's time to cash in big and bet the game at mybookie.ag. If you haven't checked them out, this is the perfect weekend to get in the action. Have a hunch on who's going to win the coin toss or what color Gatorade the winning coach will be wearing? Log on now, check out the props, and get in on the action. Don't just watch the game, lay down some cash and be a part of it. Join me and thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag. MyBookie is the industry-leading online sportsbook, and its players enjoy the fastest payout in the business when they win. I would only recommend a service that's been good to me and my listeners. That's why I urge you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay, without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. They have in-game live betting so you can place a bet after kickoff. Join now and score free cash to place your Super Bowl wager on the house. Right now, MyBookie is giving away up to $1,000 to every new player. Sign up today and score an instant 50% bonus on your first deposit. That's right. If you join with $100, you'll get a $150 bankroll to play with. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate offer. Play, win, and get paid. All right, Mike, so let's play the little hypothetical game, because this is the off season and it is all hypothetical. Even the Alex Smith trade isn't set in stone because it is still the 2017 lead year. Let's say the Jags and Kirk Cousins camp work something out and they get a deal done. How does Kirk Cousins necessarily fit into this Jaguars offense in your eyes?
Well, I think he can do a lot of what Bortles can do, only on an elevated frequency, right? I think he's a lot more accurate. I think he's a lot more sound in the pocket. He has some mobility, some underrated mobility. He's a guy that I really like in the West Coast implemented parts of Hackett's offense. There are a lot of spread opportunities, but he also implements a lot of West Coast stuff, and especially on third down in the red zone. So I think he could do a really good job here. I remember when he was coming out of college at Michigan State, he was a guy, while everybody was big on Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins was the mid-round quarterback that I was really intrigued by, given his West Coast offense appeal. And I think you'll see that Hackett has done a good job with the way he game plans. He's one of the better scripters coming out the gate. You notice what he did in Pittsburgh. You notice what he did in New England. And I think for Kirk Cousins, that can only help him, because Jay Gruden was very good at that as well. I think he's got a very good leadership edge to him. He's a likable guy from everything I've been told. And I think from a general focus standpoint, he would allow you to feel like you have the guy in place. I feel like with Blake Bortles over the last several years, there's always whispers, not in the locker room, but external whispers of hey, maybe he might not be around for a while. Hey, he's competing for his job still. Hey, there may be a short leash. I think bringing in a guy or paying a guy establishes him as the guy. There's no other ifs, ands, or buts. We're not speculating about Brandon Allen or Chad Henne somehow asserting the starting quarterback. Well, chances are because probably, well, Brandon Allen won't be there, and Chad Henne might not either be. So, right. I mean, I think this kind of, and you know what? And with that said, too, we talked about flexibility before the last break with Bortles. The flexibility Kirk Cousins gives you is you do not have to focus on the quarterback position. Sure, maybe you draft a backup in the fifth or sixth round or what have you, but your guy is Kirk Cousins, at least for the next 2 years, and he's going to be paid like that.
Right. And taking the Jaguars out of the equation, assuming the guy is Blake Bortles, do you have any particular fits that you see for Kirk that makes the most sense? I know, obviously, Denver is talked up a lot. They're talking Buffalo, New York Jets, Arizona Cardinals. But what fit kind of stands out to you that isn't Jacksonville?
So I read today that Joe DiFilippo, the Eagles quarterbacks coach, is getting interviewed by the Vikings for their offensive coordinator job. If DiFilippo gets interviewed and gets the job, it's a very similar system to what Pat Shurmur runs, very West Coast oriented. I think Kirk Cousins would have a field day in Minnesota. I think he's an ideal fit there. If you look at the Browns, Todd Haley, not a fit. He's not going to be able to air raid stuff out. I just don't see it.
Right.
You look at the Jets, yeah, there's some potential there. I mean, he's very similar in arm talent to Josh McCown, in my opinion. But, you know, I think the thing is if you're not willing to adjust to a franchise quarterback that you're going to pay $30 million, then you're not a fit. You know what I mean? Like, does
right.
that make sense? Like,
yeah.
Like, you would have to do certain things with Kirk that you didn't do with Blake. You would have to do certain things with Kirk that you wouldn't do with Case Keenum. He has the mobility of Keenum. He has the mobility. You know, I would say he has similar mobility to Josh McCown, who was deceptively quick against the Jaguars and a couple of other franchises. You know, and that's the thing. So you've got to put your guy in the best opportunity. Honestly, the best fit for him prior to 2016 was probably Philadelphia. I think if you look at what they've done with Kirk Cousins, I mean, what they've done with Carson Wentz and what they've done with Nick Foles, I mean, they've gotten them in positions. They're running RPOs. They're getting the ball out quickly. They're very West Coast oriented. And I think if John DiFilippo does end up leaving, he's a good shot there. Now, if you wanted to talk about weapons and what would appeal most to me if I were Kirk Cousins, I'd be very, very interested in Arizona just because you have David Johnson who can be a bell cow. You know he's going to recover from that injury. Then you have, you know, Larry Fitzgerald. I like Jerron Brown a lot. And I think that team has talent. So they just really need to prepare that offensive line for, you know, the long haul.
Now, if we bring it back to Jaguars hypotheticals with Kirk Cousins, like you said, how he's everyone's quote-unquote dream at this point, what would, and there's arguments back and forth on this, and I could see it going either way. I don't like to automatically guarantee that paying him, they could still find a way to pay other guys, but realistically, if they gave him the deal that, you know, he's expected to get, how does this team then pay Jalen Ramsey, Yannick Ngakoue, and Miles Jack, along with countless other guys? And I mean, if it's a 2-year window, you might win a Super Bowl in that point, but at the same time, how drastically could a Kirk contract affect the Jaguars long term?
Well, you want to win a Super Bowl. Like, that's the main goal, right? So, you know, sometimes you have to say, screw it, screw the future, let's just get it while we can. And I think, yeah, it's an issue. I mean, you're going to have to pay Yannick Ngakoue a very large amount of money. I mean, this kid's gotten 20 sacks in two seasons. He's going to probably be a 10-sack-a-year guy for a very long time. And, you know, he's still very young. I think you look at Miles Jack. Miles Jack could be in for a lot of money. Let's say Telvin Smith exceeds expectations again next year. Then you're not releasing him after 1 year when he doesn't have guarantees. You know, if Calais Campbell keeps playing the way he is, I don't know how you cut him after the ceremonial second year. And, you know, they've got a lot of talent here, and Malik Jackson is a guy you want to keep around for a while. You're paying Marcell Dareus a lot of money. This defense you want to keep together because that's the lifeblood of your team, and I know you want a quarterback, but what if Kirk Cousins doesn't work out here? What if you've spent the farm on this quarterback and he doesn't work out? You at least know what you have with Blake. And then when you look at Kirk paying him that money, if he, let's say he makes $30 million a year, where do you have spot? I know the cap keeps rising, but you don't know how much for certain. And you're also got this young nucleus. You want to continue to lock up your homegrown talent. I mean, let's say, you know, Cam Robinson in a few years. If you're still paying guarantees on Kirk Cousins' contract 3 years from now, you might not have the opportunity to really do things unless you have to renegotiate. And as we've seen, Kirk Cousins is a very patient guy, obviously dealing with the franchise tag, and he's made a lot of money. But I just don't know how you long-term decide, hey, we are going to invest everything right now. That said, a franchise quarterback is everything to this league, and they're going to have to make this decision one way or another.
So we can talk some more long-term potential in a second, but Chris, do you have any last Kirk Cousins questions before I take it to a quick break?
I think Mike pretty much handled most of that.
All right, so we will take this to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about everyone's favorite part of the offseason, that being the NFL draft. So assuming that Blake Bortles is the guy for now and not a free agent, whether that be Kirk Cousins or any other option, there is the NFL draft, and it's almost highly anticipated that the Jaguars, even if Blake is the guy, will draft someone probably earlier than later. Now, there are rumors as to who they like, who they've met with. Chris had the scoop on Mason Rudolph in his meeting at the Senior Bowl, and that seems like a guy they'd like. But Mike, first I'll ask you more in a scenario rather than specific guys. What do you think is most likely for them to address the quarterback position in the draft? Could it be that they pick one at 29? Could it be that they instead take a guard or tight end and then take a quarterback in maybe on day two? Or, and I'll ask this kind of as a two-way, do you think they could trade up for a guy? And how much more or less likely would that be than going after a Kirk Cousins?
Well, I think nailing down a potential heir is important, whether you are crazy about Blake or not. I think you have to take a guy in the first three rounds if you're going to take a guy. I'm not a huge believer in taking a quarterback in the fourth round and thinking he could be the next Kirk Cousins. I don't think that's a thing. You do that when you have an established guy and you want a long-term backup with potential. So my thing is, I would expect if they did take a quarterback, it would be in those first three rounds. The issue is they won so many games this season that they've kind of played themselves into a weird no man's land towards the end of the rounds. And I think, you know, as you start winning, I forgot who, somebody said this to me the other day, that when you start winning, you make boring picks. And you know what? They might make a boring pick in the first round. They might take a guard and then maybe trade both their day two picks to move up in the second round to take a quarterback. You never know. But I think they have to make that move this year. They have to hedge their bets if they do keep Blake around.
No shot, you think, at potentially trading up even in the first and just being total balls to the wall in that scenario?
I think Carson Wentz and Jared Goff have changed everything. If you do all of that and invest the way that, you know, Los Angeles and Philly did, and you make that huge trade up, you're going to have to start that kid from the jump, because this is a team that a lot of people feel is built to succeed for a while. And that means that you're taking a lot of ammunition away from building that team. You know, if you trade, let's say, a future first-round pick, a second-round pick, a third-round pick, and then a future third, you know, that's five potential starters that you're trading to move up for this kid. So to, if you look at what happened with Mahomes, I mean, Alex Smith had a guy, you know, had to field questions about Patrick Mahomes all season. You don't want that for Blake Bortles, especially when he's in a contract year.
Right.
And speaking drafts and quarterbacks, are there any guys that you like particularly and maybe who the Jags would like in those first three rounds?
Well, you know, with this playoff run, I'm extremely far behind
right.
on tape. But that said, I am a Mayfield fan. Like, I like him a lot. I don't know if he necessarily fits what the Jaguars would want to do, just because I know Coughlin's so big on size. You brought up Rudolph. He seems on paper to be a guy that makes a lot of sense. But yeah, I mean, outside of that, I really haven't watched a ton of quarterback tape yet. I just started some tape watching this morning because it's been so hectic. So yeah, I mean, normally I start doing that the last week in November, but you know, when the team you're covering is winning the way they are and people want the content, you got to kind of focus on the here and now.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Mason Rudolph does seem to be a fit if we're going to judge this off of a kind of scheming. I can almost see, you know, what I've seen from watching him is essentially what they want Bortles to be and how they kind of shaped their offense for this previous year. Now, if they have plans with Blake to have the offense grow more in the future, I'm not sure, but at least at a baseline, he seems like a fit. But that I brought up the way Coughlin looks at quarterbacks, and you mentioned size. People have always talked about the Parcells method and how that's used to scout quarterbacks by people in his tree. Whether it be kind of outdated or not, do you think that Coughlin, when he's looking at quarterbacks, will still seem to rely on that this year, or do you think that is kind of overblown?
Well, I think that's the benefit of having this three-man leadership group, is everybody, for at least in some aspect, has a say. So I think, you know, Dave Caldwell, I like to call Dave Caldwell a member of the GM Brat Pack. He's kind of like the younger generation with the old edge, you know, him, Howie Roseman, Schneider, like those guys, what's his name in Minnesota? Like those guys are all, you know, they'll take risks. They'll make interesting moves. They're very smart with the cap. And I think they also have a lot of scouting know-how. I mean, Dave Caldwell was a scout for years. I think that, you know, he has his own ideas. You know, Jim Sorge was not a big quarterback. You know, guys that backed up Peyton Manning were not big necessarily. So I think with him, you know, I think Dave Caldwell's influence we'll know how much influence he has by how this draft goes, I think.
Interesting.
It's almost like there's a checks and balances thing kind of going on between Dave Caldwell.
But that's the thing. That's how good organizations are run. You look at what Philly's done with, you know, Joe Douglas, who's their head of player personnel, and Howie Roseman, the GM. Howie Roseman didn't have a strong-headed, proven personnel guy before, and he ran the team into the ground a little bit, and now they're a Super Bowl team. You could argue that no one had a better offseason than the Philadelphia Eagles because Joe Douglas's influence and the checks and balances of that.
It's weird being in the year 2018 and we get to finally talk about the Jags front office being a good front office. I just want to put that out there. It all came together.
You know what? They are a really good front office. Like, you know, when I got here, I was actually a big believer in Dave Caldwell because I agreed with probably about 80% of his moves. And you look at what he has done now, Yanni Kingakwe, Miles Jack, Jalen Ramsey, all of these talented players. Malik Jackson's worked out. All of these guys have lifted up their game in their second year with this franchise. Even Blake Bortles did. And so now it's kind of hard to hate on the guy, because if you look at just a change in coaching mindset, a change in play calling, this team is thriving under his draft picks. Sure, they brought in Boye, they brought in Blaise Campbell, Leonard Fournette's there. But there were five big contributors that were brought in this year. A team's 53 players, and you would say that at least 45 of them are meaningful, or big contributors. And so 40, that's not a bad look. You know, there are 25 guys on this team prior to Coughlin and Doug Marrone getting the reins. And I think most of those guys are essential parts.
And I think that's an area of the roster building that's kind of, I guess, misconstrued for the Jaguars, because people kind of reference the Jags or whatever to the Patriots in ways that are like, well, the Patriots don't have to sign all of these big free agents, and yet they're still good. But if you look at the draft history for the Patriots, they miss a lot. They might get like one or two guys out of each draft, whereas the past three or four drafts for the Jaguars, he's been hitting home runs.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there are a lot of misconceptions with how the three-headed monster works, or the three-headed decision, whatever it's called. And I think you look at how much success this team has had over the last 12 months. I mean, a lot of the parts have been there. Doug Marrone was here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think Tom Coughlin deserves a lot of credit for how he has steered the ship, but he also didn't build it. You know what I mean? So I think that's something to kind of have a little bit of perspective on.
I'll, unless Chris has any other questions, I'll ask two final ones for you. One of them relating to Coughlin. From your insight, I mean, we know that he's involved in the word was decisions have to be cleared by him. But what do you think his biggest impact has been on the team? Is it personnel, or is it more of a culture thing?
Well, I would say if coaching fits into culture, then it's a culture thing. He's out on the practice field every single day. He's always trading notes with Doug Marrone. They talk a lot. He's extensively talking to position coaches. You look at the guys they hired, probably because of him, and Pat Flaherty DB coach, Perry Fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are Coughlin guys, and they both coached up their talent to kind of exceed expectations, even when you consider how good the secondary is on paper. So I think he's had a huge impact in the coaching philosophy and the coaching aspects in practice and the week of preparation. And I think that can't be, you know, you can't put like a number on that. You can't put like any price on that. I just think his intellectual property when it comes to coaching is very valued.
Definitely. And then, I'll hit my final question for you. You're a Philly guy, so I've got to ask, with the Super Bowl being a couple days away, I know no Jaguars fans want to talk about it, but can you give us a prediction for what the final score will be in the Super Bowl between the Patriots and the Eagles?
That's a tough one. Bleeding Green Nation, my old stomping grounds, asked me the other day for one, and I said 27-26 Patriots. You know, until they're dethroned again, it's hard to pick against them. I do think Philly is going to be a very tough out for them. In a lot of ways, I think they do things better than the Jaguars defensively, despite not having the same amount of talent. I think they adjust a lot better. Offensively, I think Doug Peterson might become one of the best offensive play callers in NFL history, just if you look at what he's done over the last 2 years and how he's established the quarterback position. But man, the GOAT's the GOAT, and it's kind of tough to pick against them.
Definitely. Then I think that will just about do it for us. We mentioned the Super Bowl, so be sure to check out the work being done by Locked On Patriots host Mark Schofield, a good friend of the podcast, as well as Locked On Eagles co-hosts Michael Kist and Ben Solak. Here's a clip from their crossover episode. And for that, thanks for tuning in to Locked On Jaguars. Mike, great to have you on. Look forward to having you on throughout the offseason as well.
Sure thing. Thanks, guys.
And that'll wrap it up for us here. Be sure to follow the Locked On Jaguars Twitter account at Locked On Jaguars and check out the site. We've got it up and rolling. We've got a lot of great writers on there producing a lot of good content for myself and Chris. Be sure to follow Chris at Misto Christofo and myself at Zach_Goodall. Subscribe on iTunes. We are also now on Spotify, so you can check us out there. And we will catch up with you guys next time.
And also, don't forget to follow Mike K.
Of course, that's right. Mike_E_K. How could I forget?